So this congregation hasn't really gotten to know my spouse Lawrence very well. He's had some other things going on Sunday mornings since I've been here. So since he's not here, I thought it'd be a good time to just pick on him for a moment. So earlier this week, he asked me. He said, "What are you preaching about this Sunday?" And I said, "Well, amongst other things, Juneteenth." And he was silent. And I said, "You do remember what Juneteenth is, don't you?" Now I know he's heard me preach about Juneteenth since at least 2021. So he's been witness to three sermons or so. And he paused for a second and then slowly said, "Something about freedom, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, it is something about freedom." But I think his response is probably pretty typical for a lot of Americans today, especially Americans who didn't grow up as Black Americans or African Americans. It's something that maybe has not been on our radar until fairly recently. And that's a shame. That's a shame because I think what Juneteenth does, amongst other things, is it invites us to talk about freedom and talk about who has historically been allowed to claim freedom and what does freedom mean right now at this moment in time. So you saw the video about the Juneteenth story. And I think the astounding thing for me about the story is that the Emancipation Proclamation came out in 1863, and it wasn't until 1865. It wasn't until 2.5 years later that those Union troops with General Granger arrived in Galveston and told those enslaved folks there, "Actually, not only are you free, but you've been free for the last 2.5 years." There were reasons why communication did not flow to all of those outlying parts of the country. There were reasons to keep people in the dark about the fact that not only were they free, but they had been free. And if you think about 2.5 years, what can you do in 2.5 years? Well, Scott can probably write about, I don't know, 600 songs in 2.5 years. And you can have, if you're, in the right age range, you can have a baby in 2.5 years, or you can write a book or two in 2.5 years. You can get a degree in 2.5 years. And 2.5 years gone like that from the lives of people who were free but didn't know that they were free. As great as this country is, it's something to think about when we hear stories like that about where this country has failed its people from time to time. So, as we think about Juneteenth now, that it has only been a federal holiday since 2021, the question becomes, what does it mean at this particular moment, especially because Juneteenth falls just around Father's Day every year. And once again, as when I preached about Mother's Day, I fall into the same sort of dilemma when I'm talking about Father's Day, because no longer does being a father or mother mean exactly the same things that we have traditionally thought that they mean. Certainly, many of us grew up with the idea of a father as a protector, maybe as the primary breadwinner, as someone who was the authority figure in the household. These days, a father can be a stay-at-home dad. Father may decide he's actually the real nurturer in the family, and he takes on that role. May not be the primary breadwinner in the family anymore. And certainly that authoritarian style of running a household is falling by the wayside more and more as people are choosing to not engage with those older ways of being in the world. But it sort of leaves me at a loss sometimes when talking about, well, what does it mean? What does Father's Day mean? What does it even mean to be a father anymore? And it's complicated. And it's complicated when we think about it in terms of Juneteenth, and we think about that we have a patriarchal system in our country. We have a system that was created by men and primarily has favored men. And the end result of that system, I think, is some of the conflict we see in our nation right now. Who's in the White House and how that administration behaves certainly harkens back to an idea of what masculinity is, what it means to be strong, what it means to be a figure that is respected. And while the emperor may not have any clothes, there are plenty of people who refuse to see that because it comforts them, I think, because it's an old idea of what it means to be strong in our world. So this is a complicated time. And as we think about freedom, we think about who freedom was for, who owned land, who could vote, who had rights, who could walk around freely and live their life fully and have choices. When we start answering those questions about who was able to do that, it starts being more and more complicated to think about what freedom was and even is at this moment in time. You know, I had the experience of being a chaplain for a while at a Catholic hospital. So when I'd walk in the room with any kind of marker that I was clergy, people would immediately call me Father, many of the Catholic patients. And it was such a thing. And you don't want to correct people. I mean, whatever their assumption of you is, you go with it. But I did learn over time that I could take that name of being called Father and translate that into something that was nurturing and helpful and confident, and it didn't have to necessarily fall in line with other ideas about what Father meant in those contexts. I think as all of you know, I'm sure, and I know some of you are limiting how much news you are taking in, but it's been quite a week in our country, and it's been a time when we've really been seeing some of our broken pieces in our system and some of these things I'm talking about really coming into play. And I want to tell you about my experience this week, because it is because of all of you and because of our larger UU community that I was able to be witness in the way that I was earlier in the week. So a few of us, clergy and laity, joined together to be watchers at the immigration courthouse. And so what we did is, with our clergy garb on, my clerical collar, which I never wear except out at social justice occasions, we went to the courthouse, went through security, and we were there. We were there with people who were pleading their cases, and we were there with people who were scared and anxious and worried and uncertain because they'd heard about ICE agents and what's been happening lately. And what we knew, those of us who were there, what we knew was that in very recent times, the current administration had put a lot of pressure on our immigration judges across the country and told them that they needed to dismiss cases, that usually there would have been things that they could do to make those cases have a more expansive timeline. Dismiss those cases, because once the case was dismissed, even though that person could appeal the case, the ICE agents could more easily grab them. So these agents weren't grabbing them because a judge was telling them to. They were grabbing them because these folks were trying to do the right thing. They were in the system. And because of some technicality or other, often because they didn't have legal representation and didn't know how to plead their case, the case was dismissed. And then these folks are snatched without warning. And it's devastating to see. And the first young man that I witnessed this with, this was after we had we had been out in the waiting area, and we'd been going around and gathering information from people so that we could find out maybe who their emergency contact was, so that we could keep track of what happened to them and maybe inform those folks, because nobody else was going to inform them. We had a number, a phone number that they could write on their arm, so that if they were detained and they got to a phone at some point, there was a helpline, a hotline that could help them out. And so I go in the courtroom after we had been in with all these folks in the waiting area and collecting this information, and I sit down next to this young man who we had not seen out there, and I notice he's alone. There's no attorney, there's no family member, nothing. And so using an app on my phone, I started to talk to him to translate. And I said, "Are you alone?" "Yes." "Have you been here less than 2 years?" "Yes." "Do you have an attorney?" "No." "This is a bad formula, right? These are the folks that are being targeted." And so we talk a little more, and he says, "This is my very first time in court." He said, I just came here a couple of months ago. I want to do the right thing. I'm a good person. I'm seeking asylum. I want to go through the process." And at this point, another one of my colleagues who was a little more seasoned joined me. And she explained to him, she said, "There are ICE agents outside." And she let me know she had just witnessed two different people being snatched. And she said, "There are ICE agents outside." And he said, "But why would they get me? I'm not a criminal." And she said, and this broke my heart, she said, "We are no longer a just or fair country. We are sorry." Now, I wondered at the time why she said that, because, you know, I'm still thinking, oh, there's got to be some hope, right? I mean, maybe they won't get him, and maybe she doesn't really know, and who knows? Because there's no list anywhere, right? You don't know who they're going to get. But she knew he fit the profile. But the reason she told him, I realized, was because when he was in front of the judge, he wasn't just pleading his case. He was able to plead for his life. And he said, "Look," he said, "detain me anywhere, here, wherever, but don't send me back to my country. I will be killed if I go back." Now, you have to think about this judge, and of course I could be reading into it, but I'm reading all of her regrets as she's on her face, as she's telling him multiple times, "I do believe you, sir, and I'm sorry, but I have to dismiss this case." And he begged again, and he said, "I know what's going to happen if you dismiss the case. I've been told they're going to get me out there. Please. You know, I'll do anything." No. So as he left, sobbing, five of us clergy from different faith traditions surrounded him, not with the intention of physically interfering with these ICE agents, but with the idea that at least this guy would know there were some people in this country who cared about him, who understood as much as we could what he was going through. And sure enough, when we got out the door, they elbowed their way past us and they grabbed him. And witnessing it is like witnessing an abduction. They don't tell that person who they are. They don't do it nicely. They don't say, would you come with us? No, they physically haul these folks off, wailing and screaming. But there is a network of folks that were there that day, and we know who that person is. We are following that. People are working on that. But that's just one person that we were able to get in that moment. So I told that story on social media this week because it needed to be told. And sometimes folks aren't, because it is hard. We're trying to hold confidentiality with this stuff, so it's hard to know how to tell the stories. There's a second story I'll tell all of you that I haven't told publicly yet. which is that when we returned to the courthouse on Thursday, it was different. The stress of the presence of those ICE agents there had put everyone on edge in that courthouse. You have to remember the security working there, the judges working there, they didn't ask for this. They're trying to do their jobs as best they can. And the tension was palpable in the air. And as we were there, our presence, our simple presence, mind you, in our clergy robes and clerical collars representing different communities like our UU community and others, our simple presence seemed to be agitating those ICE agents. And it reached a point where one of them grabbed a woman, a Christian minister, a lay minister actually, but in a clerical collar, and shoved her up against the wall, you know, up on her toes, while at the same time another one of our party was physically picked up and hauled off by an ICE agent. Now, these are American citizens, and my understanding is that American citizens are not under the authority of ICE agents to be picked up and hauled off and treated in this way. And these security officers there at the courthouse simply had to stand there and witness this because they're not allowed to intervene. Profanities are being screamed by these folks simply because they did not like the fact that we were there. And I, along with the rest of our group of four, were hauled out of that courthouse. And the rule is when you're expelled from the courthouse, you can't return that same day. And the security came out very nicely to talk to us and explain the challenges that they have in these situations. But this is where we are, here in the United States of America. And I know it's not good news. It's disturbing news. I was incredibly disturbed. You know, I'm a good student type. I don't really look to get in trouble. I'm not looking to, be oppositional in situations. And I am appalled that this is what it has come to, that people have to stand up in this particular way against these forces at this moment in time. It's not what I've understood American freedom to mean or be. It's not justice for the folks who are there trying to do the right thing, to have their cases heard. They're picking low-hanging fruit, you know. As one of these ICE agents is screaming to me about drug cartels in Mexico, and meanwhile, the woman they're grabbing and carrying out is just a young woman, you know, just a vulnerable young woman, and it's like it doesn't compute what you're saying about the people that are being targeted at this moment in time. And this is part, I think, of the Juneteenth story, the idea that when freedom for all people was declared, it didn't just happen, right? It was slow, a slow process. And we know that even when General Granger actually showed up in Galveston and said, you're free, that was only the beginning of a whole other series of events and experiences for people in the black community in the United States, Jim Crow laws and the school-to-prison pipeline and so on. So we don't just fix things neatly in our country. It takes time, and sometimes things also devolve and have to be refixed again so that freedom can be ensured. But as challenging as all of this is to talk about and think about, and I know it's a lot to have on your hearts this morning, I also want to lift up a couple of things. One, we have people who we look back in our UU history, and certainly people we look back in American history, who have been working to ensure freedom for all for a very long time. Whether we're talking about Abraham Lincoln or we're talking about Martin Luther King Jr., these are folks, father-type figures, if you will, who show up love bravely and act with integrity. And it's important to remember, gender aside, how many people in our nation's history and currently are doing that important work. And we saw yesterday, right? We saw all the people out in the streets. Some of you were able to do that, and some of you physically might not have been able to be out there, but you certainly were represented by the people who were there. This morning I was reading it's anywhere from 5 million to 11 million or more people who were out in the streets yesterday to make sure, to ensure that we have our freedom, to say we don't want a king, that image, that father image, the king authoritarian type, that is not what we are looking for in our nation. We have a different vision of what leadership looks like, and we will be present for that kind of leadership to thrive and move into the space that is now being occupied by people who do not have the interests of all folks in the United States at their hearts. That's why people were out there, millions and millions of people. And there was like 10,000 or so people at that other thing yesterday, you know? Whatever that was, they were there. So sad. Nobody there. Empty bleachers. But millions of people in the streets, folks. I read this morning it's probably the largest mass protest in United States history. There is hope. There's hope. All those people in the streets don't want that experience that happened in the courthouse last week. They are not looking for that. They want something else. None of us are free until all of us are free. Juneteenth teaches us that freedom delayed is not just a political injustice, it's a spiritual crisis. And Father's Day also reminds us that it is relational. It's all about the ways that we show up for each other when we are in need. That's what it's all about. That's the America I believe in and think that we can all build together. But we have to continue to protect the freedoms in this country. Every ounce of positive, strong father energy will be needed alongside mother energy. And however else you identify, we need everybody's energy. Because the systemic ghosts that lay behind Juneteenth's revelry continue to haunt us. We can really draw a direct line to the enslaved people in America, to the positions the current administration takes in our nation. It's not complicated to see the racism that is underneath so much of what they do, the homophobia, the misogyny, it's all there. You know, it's famously quoted by Martin Luther King Jr., but it was our own Theodore Parker, Unitarian minister, who said, "The arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice." It's a great quote. It's a great quote because it helps us to see the bigger picture. It helps us to come out of a really challenging week where we see freedoms being curtailed and know that that is a piece of a bigger story. And yesterday we got evidence of that bigger story when we saw millions of people in the street saying, no, this isn't the story we want. This is the story we want. And we're all going to get behind this bigger story. And if I can do anything for all of you this morning, it is to just make sure that you keep that spark of hope lit. It's there. It's real. Ground yourself in the love that is at our center. And know that when we work from a place of love and care for other people, we can bend that arc. It might be just a tiny bit, but it will be a profoundly important tiny bit. And that love will help that arc move toward the justice, the freedom, and the liberty for all that is and should be the United States.